Here is a clip that, thank goodness, I will not usually say this, but thank goodness for the algorithm sometimes. The algorithm
sometimes
on Instagram sent me this gem. So this is from Sarah Silverman. And I like Sarah Silverman. I think she's, you know, she's not always great. I think she tries, you know, her message to Bernie supporters in 2016 at the DNC, I didn't love, but I think
that was a misstep, I think.
I think she's a good heart. I think she tries. Yeah. So
I think that's fair.
I'll forgive her that. So this clip in particular, I found really striking. And this clip is from her podcast. So to set it up, this is a caller. She has people call into her show.
Huh.
And so this caller talks about her brother who asked for a recommendation to join the police force. So let's listen to what happens.
I had a brother who was on the police force in San Jose. And when he was starting the process to become a police officer, relatives are sent out a packet. It's basically like a evaluation form, you know, whether or not your relative is cuckoo or not. And mine was. And so on the back of the form, you know, it said, you know, is there any reason why? And I said, yeah, don't ever give this guy a gun. He shouldn't have a gun.
Wow.
And I said, I didn't believe he should be a police officer. I didn't believe he had the right level of maturity, wisdom, I don't know. Anyway, he did become a police officer. I never heard back. I never, you know, my brother and I didn't have the best relationship, but he felt like he needed me at that time to get into the force. And he did, and he wound up shooting somebody and killing him. And it was, the case was, you know, like behind closed doors, it was sealed, whatever they want to call it. It wasn't for public to find out. But my brother wound up getting off, and it always kind of, in a weird way, haunts me that, you know, I tried to let them know, and he just wasn't equipped. And unfortunately, my brother did pass away a few years ago, not from being on the police force, but he just led kind of a tragic life.
So you can go to at Sarah Kate Silverman, her Instagram, if you want to watch that full clip. But, you know, the point of that clip is, I think, illustrative of the police force in general across this country. That sister tried. She knew that her brother was not a fit for the police force.
Right.
She warned them that he was not a fit for the police force. Her brother killed someone. And it was a case behind closed doors. The public didn't get to find out what happened and why. You know, the public didn't get to find out that the sister had warned them, and he got off. And imagine how often this happened. We don't know. We will never know.
That's bad. So this was in San Jose. That's a Silicon Valley area, Northern California. I am curious to know if we can find out who this gal is, maybe interview her and find out who her brother is, because I would be wanting to dig for those records.
Yeah.
File a CPR or a FOIA request. But that is amazing to me that she warned them and they still didn't care and didn't want, but it just speaks to how toxic the environment is. You know, we talked about this yesterday, the way the training is not going to solve the problem, because the training these officers are given is very much this macho, everybody's the enemy. It's better to shoot and ask questions after. I mean, that's the kind of thing that they're fed daily, you know, in their environment and in their trainings. And most of their trainings aren't even up to speed. You know, we recently had that, we talked about this yesterday a little bit, the 40 millimeter less lethal rounds. They were trying to get an injunction against the LAPD using them. The NLG was. The judge gave them a partial order, but part of what was included in that is if the officers had the appropriate training, they would be allowed to use these less lethal 40 millimeters. you know, and I'm like, I read this and I'm like, this is worthless. It's absolutely worthless because right now they're going to send the entire Rampart division to this 2-hour online training and say, voila, they're trained, go at it. You know, it solves nothing. Because the idea that we have of training, right, your a common sense idea for your average civilian is like, oh, they're actually going to learn how to use these things properly, and they'll think it through before they use it, and it'll be much better. Yeah, that's not what happens. It's not what happens.
Yeah, you would hope it does, but it doesn't. And you would hope that the hiring, the powers that be who hire these people would pay attention to a sister who says, do not hire my brother, he is not mature enough to handle this, that they would pay attention to that. But no, they don't.
You know, and it also speaks to this idea that they should not be going on mental health calls. They shouldn't be going on homeless or unhoused calls. Like there's a million things that we send the police to do that they should not be entrusted with doing. So again, the structural changes that need to come, they haven't been addressed. Derek Chauvin's trial did not address them. It was a step in the right direction. I'm glad that he's being held accountable for his actions. But, you know, we talked about this yesterday too. We need to get rid of qualified immunity. Until we get rid of qualified immunity, there's going to be little accountability from most police actions. That's just a fact.
So this is a Channel 4 out of New York. NYPD struggles to find new recruits as retirements also rise. Let's all shed a tear for the NYPD. Calls for change in the New York City Police Department have echoed across the city these past few years, but the largest police force in the country is struggling to fill its ranks. With the application deadline to become a member of the NYPD extended until Tuesday, NBC New York's David Ushri is asking the questions many are wondering. Who would want to become a police officer right now and why? So basically,
I mean, there's an argument sociopaths, but
right. So they're
but that's not what they're getting at.
Yeah. So they're saying but convincing other young people that is the challenge police departments across the country are facing, not just in New York City. There have not only been a plunge in applications, but there's also a surge in retirements. It's tough being a cop right now with all the rhetoric and things that happening throughout the country that have an effect on New York and how we want to do our job.
And lie about Molotov cocktails flying out the windows. I mean, come on now.
Everyone make a frowny face.
Exactly.
Said Chief of Department Rodney Harrison, it's really hard. Just last month, the department instructed its officers not to take unscheduled days off ahead of the outcome of the Derek Chauvin trial, the former Minneapolis officer who was later convicted of murdering George Floyd. So why would anyone want to be a cop right now, Harrison says, to make a difference.
Oh, God.
Harrison, who has his own share of experience with policing in the Black community while growing up in Queens, says it's not easy to address these concerns. I got to talk to the young men and women out there about a lot of the good things that come about being part of the NYPD, he said, adding that there's more to being an NYPD officer than the uniform. I started my career in Queens and Astoria. One of the things I always share with new police officers coming on is to try different parts of the police department.
This is like such cop-ganda right now. I can't.
You can go into become undercover, go into nursing, go into aviation, go into computer crime. There are so many careers the NYPD has.
Oh, man.
Officer Matthew Jackson was one of the young men who heard Harrison's message. As a kid in Harlem, he was mentored by Jim Harrison. He admits battling anti-police hostility on the streets, but the positives are far greater. On and on. So
I cannot believe that they actually published this. This is propaganda. This is cop-ganda.
It's
cringe. This is so cringe. This is NBC. Yikes, NBC.
Yeah, so it's a real cringy story. I just really wanted to make fun of it.
Can we make fun of it? I mean, because the real story here would be like, okay, well, let's examine the reasons why they're having a hard time recruiting police officers. Isn't that actually the real story here? Not publishing propaganda to get people to see them differently than what they are?
Right.
Maybe talk about the corruptness in the NYPD. Maybe go interview Frank Serpico about his experiences. I mean, there's a million things you could talk about. There's reasons people don't want to join the police force. And that's why we only have sociopaths or like massive psychopathy involved with the guys that do. Look what they're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if some people, I think, don't want to join the police force because now it is clearer than ever, perhaps, that this is not a group of people that you want to join. So maybe people who would have joined with maybe good intention and later on been swept up in.
You know, it's part of the, I think part of the problem too is the way the police department and the police force has been sort of just glorified by Hollywood for decades too, right? The stories that they tell about cops, about the police force, they've glorified this and have told tales that aren't really accurate about what the police do and what they're actually like. They have made them heroes, so, you know, per se. You know, like, I think a great example of this right now is Jamie McBride, who is a union boss here at the LAPD. You know, he got into it with LeBron James, about a tweet that he had said about, you know, cops being murderers. And it was a perfectly acceptable tweet, but Jamie McBride went after him and even told the NBA that he should be disciplined for what he said, which is an outrageous thing. It's like, are you kidding me? Then you go look at who Jamie McBride is. He's been involved in plenty of officer-involved shootings, which is their parlance for we shot someone. His daughter has murdered, who is also Tony McBride. His daughter's Tony McBride. She has murdered somebody. But he has been hired by Hollywood on multiple occasions for movies. He's worked for Michael Bay multiple times. So this is a guy who is also a member of the Screen Actors Guild, right? And he's just a big Trump supporter. You go to his social media, although a lot of these things have been deleted now. There was a photo of him that I took a screenshot of where it said Donald Trump's life matters, except it was a BLM logo. So that's the kind of people we're dealing with, right? Yet Hollywood glorifies this and says that they're heroes and that it's you know, a worthwhile endeavor and you'll be helping people, not, you know, and then reality, they're out here, you know, brutalizing and occupying populations with, you know, military grade equipment. So now we have NBC being stenographers for the cops, which is just another form of propaganda.
Well, yeah. So they're making it out as if it's the people who are the problem. It's the folks who are the problem. These mean people, these awful people. Oh, you know, the cops are met with such opposition on the street. These meanies on the street, they're literally printing, you know, as if these cops are 5-year-olds whining.
Right.
And it's sort of weird article.
It's weird. It's just so disconnected from everything. And, you know, there's really no excuse for it at this point. Here in 2021, there's no excuse, especially, I mean, talk to any of the press that have worked a skirmish line. And they're going to have tales about how they've been brutalized by officers. I mean, as you know, I've been shot up by these guys a couple times. The LAPD broke my car window, like intentionally shot my window out when I was covering a protest.
Well, in last year, I was
yeah, that's right,
by police and lost all my equipment and they, you know, my phone.
I don't think it can be. How can you excuse this? How can you excuse this, especially when they're trying to go after First Amendment rights? You cannot convince me at this point that that isn't part of the deal, because we've seen, look, it's bad enough. Don't get me wrong. I am not minimizing the way protesters are treated by the police. I am not doing that at all. I think it's horrific. The reason I am out there on the streets with these protesters is because I'm so appalled by how they're treated. And I want to make sure that other folks are able to see what happens, like to really see what happens and not have this NBC article, you know, thrown at them and think everything's fine, right? But I think that they absolutely do target the press. And I think, you know, there's that night that I filmed the activist that was being beaten by a riot shield.
As you guys are aware, Biden had his address to Congress, and he announced to the surprise of many that he was going to withdraw us from make a full withdrawal from Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. So this is kind of the summary from Axios, if you, you know, weren't paying attention or...
Hard exit. That's an interesting framing.
Yeah, so they framed it as the hard exit from Afghanistan.
Yeah, so I don't think that's entirely accurate, but let's carry on.
Right. So the biggest foreign policy surprise from President Biden's first 100 days was his decision to act on a promise his predecessors hadn't. The full U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. Why it matters. Biden didn't settle on an unconditional withdrawal because he saw a path to a stable Afghanistan without U.S. troops in the country. Instead, he argued that it was clear by now that no such path existed with them there. Flashback, as Donald Trump's May 1st deadline to pull out approached without any announcement from Biden, a delay became inevitable, likely with all the usual caveats about supporting the diplomatic process and responding to conditions on the ground. One Middle Eastern official told me knowingly that Biden's challenge was to convince Americans that he was getting out and the Taliban that he was prepared to stay. So to the surprise from Biden's mid-April announcement was not the timeline, all U.S. troops out by September 11th, but how definitive it was. This is not conditions-based, a senior administration's official emphasized. No counterterrorism force would stay behind. After 20 years, America was getting out. Senior leaders in the Pentagon reportedly argued against that approach behind closed doors. Former top commanders like David Petraeus did so publicly. In his speech, Biden mentioned the counterarguments, such as the U.S. would be abandoning its leverage or handing its foes a victory, and discarded them as a recipe for keeping American troops in Afghanistan indefinitely. So there are some points that we should discuss here. And I re-listened to Biden's speech on this right before going live. And I find it honestly hard to kind of decipher him.
I'm sorry for laughing, but yes,
it's
that can often be the case.
Because I think he does really do a good job of coming across as like, oh, good old boy, sincere Joe. I have a good heart. My boy Bo was in the war. I understand. Yeah, I voted for the war, but now I went in 2008, and we can't keep doing this. It's clear that it's clear that this is just gonna, you know, that everyone keeps saying that if we withdraw, then it's just gonna leave a vacuum, and they're just gonna keep saying that no matter what. So he's making the right, like, every argument that I have, or a lot of the arguments that I have against these military industrial complex people, like the Hillarys and the Condoleezzas and the David Petraeuses, Biden said in that speech. And so in a good world, that was a good speech and a good plan. But can I trust him? No, probably not. I want to. What are your thoughts?
I think this is a very complicated situation. Let me just start with that. I think when we look at George W. Bush's wars, that Afghanistan and Iraq are two totally different entities and different domains of discourse, and I'll explain why. Afghanistan has been a place that has been invaded multiple times by multiple countries, not just the United States, and it's always been a disaster. It's disaster after disaster after disaster. So I think that's the first thing we need to look at. I don't know that it made sense ever to invade either Iraq or Afghanistan, but for very different reasons, right? So Iraq was obviously, this is the bigger fish that they wanted to fry, so to speak. There was no evidence that was clear and true. They fabricated it. We know they went to war on fabricated evidence. That's not a controversial statement at this point. There was no weapons of mass destruction. And they did this knowingly. I mean, this to me makes the entire Bush administration war criminals on a scale that is just beyond. beyond understanding to me, but this is what we are looking at. And it really, I can say tangentially, I couldn't get that word out, that it really irritates me that people try to rehabilitate George W. Bush at this point. No, do not rehabilitate that guy. He's awful. Okay, he did awful things.
Down there painting immigrants now, right?
I can't. The guy, he belongs in The Hague. He's a horrible, what he did is so unforgivable. And it was, I mean, the dead bodies on the Iraq side, on the U.S. side, like all of it is just horrifying. And for what? I think it's worth historically looking at, because he did try to loop Afghanistan and Iraq to get like all of this together, right? We do know that Al-Qaeda has always had a stronghold in Afghanistan, also not controversial. We also have given them weapons, right? It depends on who's our bigger enemy, Russia? Because if it's Russia all the time, then the things we've done to fight Russia that have come back to haunt us are manifold, right? Afghanistan is just one example of that.
So here is a piece about that has some statistics that I found interesting. So the thing that I found interesting about this article out of The Hill is Americans largely want to be out of Afghanistan, and that is mm-hmm. no So clearly there's plenty of room for Trump to build an unassailable case for withdrawal, taking a swipe at the policies of George W. Bush and Barack Obama and give himself a much needed boost in the polls. But mm-hmm. Trump blew it, and now Biden will get the win. I would say maybe if Biden.
Maybe, yeah. So,
the most recent polling has Americans favoring withdrawal by a 73% to 27% margin. That's pretty big. Majorities in all demographic groups and among Democrats, independents, and Republicans favor getting out. There is hardly an issue in American politics that enjoys such widespread support. Polling has been clear for the last few years that getting out of Afghanistan would be a political winner. A 2020 Koch Institute sponsored poll.
Yeah. Wait, can we just have that for a second as a topic of conversation?
Right? I mean,
Coke is sponsoring YouGov polls now. I mean, well, hang on. It was the Economist, so I guess that's really not. I would think Cato Institute would be, but that's not a stretch, I suppose.
Yeah, right. Obviously, Coke should not be sponsoring polls, but anyway. One might claim that support for withdrawal reflects a lack of knowledge of the situation. But a 2018 YouGov poll showed a majority of the public in favor of withdrawal and even higher percentages of U.S. Armed Forces veterans supporting withdrawal. So that is an interesting statistic as well, that the Armed Forces and veterans support withdrawal as well. So the Brookings Institution attempted to put on a brave face on public support, claiming in a headline disingenuously that Americans are not unanimously war-weary on Afghanistan. So, I mean, obviously this is the Brookings Institution. Yet both polls it cited showed pluralities in favor of withdrawal. I just found those interesting, just as kind of a framing. Hillary Clinton warns of huge consequences in Afghan-U.S. troop withdrawal. Of course she does. Of course she does, because she's Hillary Clinton.
She's a neocon. She's a neoconservative.
The one who cackled about, what was it, Gaddafi? Cackling.
Oh, God, that was horrible. I mean, granted, Gaddafi wasn't the greatest guy out there. I'm not defending him as a good person, but she is just grotesque for how she handled that. That was just,
and she wants to, like, drone strike Assange.
Right.
Just sort of go back in the woods, Hillary.
Henry says his work for today is done, by the way.
Oh my God. Awful, awful. Okay. Former U.S. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has warned of huge consequences of President Joe Biden's decision to withdraw American troops from Afghanistan. Mrs. Clinton told CNN there was a risk to the Taliban, the Islamist group ousted in 2001 by the U.S.-led invasion, could retake control.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it aims to complete the withdrawal by 11 September. However, the Taliban have been carrying out more attacks. This is what we call a wicked problem, Mrs. Clinton told CNN.
Which is to withdraw American troops from Afghanistan. There are only a few thousand there now, but they will all be gone by the anniversary of September 11th. What do you think of that decision?
Well, it's been made, and I know it's a very difficult decision. This is what we call a wicked problem. You know, there are consequences, both foreseen and unintended, of staying and of leaving. The president has made the decision to leave. And I think that our government has to focus on two huge consequences. One, the potential collapse of the Afghan government and a takeover of Afghanistan by the Taliban, probably with a resumption of civil war in certain parts of the country, but a largely Taliban-run government at some point in the not-too-distant future.
I am determined, because Delaware has an incredibly high cancer rate because of freaking DuPont. Also, DuPont is so disgusting. They're one of the DuPont kids, and by kid I mean he's like 40 or whatever right now. He raped a three-year-old and did not get in trouble. Like, he got
what?
Yes, it happened like 5 years ago or something. So I'm determined. I'm gonna research the hell out of DuPont.
How is this even possible? Like, oh my god, I have not heard of this story.
Let me.
How is he not in jail?
Let me pull it up. On February 6th, 2009, Robert Richards admitted to raping his three-year-old daughter.
Oh, wait a minute. What? His own daughter?
Yeah. I feel horrible, he told the judge, according to court documents. There's no excuse for what I have done. The lawyer, his lawyer, calling the 6'4", roughly 300-pound Richards a somewhat gentle person, argued he would not fare well in jail. Hours later, Richards walked away from the Delaware Superior Court a free man. He pleaded guilty to a charge of rape in the fourth degree, paid a fine of $4,395.
Are you kidding me?
And promised to attend a high-end treatment center in Massachusetts. Judge Jan Jordan, who presided over the case, had initially considered sentencing Richards to 8 years in prison. Ultimately, she gave him 8 years of probation. I have concerns about this because arguably you should be in jail for what you did, Jordan said during the sentencing, but I think you have significant treatment needs that have to be addressed, and you have very strong family support. Oh yeah, there would be strong DuPont family support.
I am so angry and disgusted right now. How is this even possible?
While he never worked for or had any affiliation with the DuPont company, he still benefits from the family fortune, which Forbes valued at $14.3 billion. And on and on. The case was missed by the local press. Imagine that. Wow, fascinating. And he avoided any negative attention. That is until 2014, after his marriage had ended, and his ex-wife, Tracy Richards, sued him in civil court for monetary damages caused by his crime. Suddenly, the earlier case became a national sensation, fueled by public outrage, and many were astonished that Richards had evaded jail time. So, that's what being a DuPont will get you.
I'm speechless.
I know.
Oh my god. His own daughter. 8 years wouldn't have been enough.
No. No.
Meanwhile, we have people serving 25 to life for smoking pot. What the f***, America?
And being murdered for pot, Marvin Scott.
Wow. Okay, Jen, I need a drink now. I don't know about you, but that's the most appalling thing I've heard in a very long time. I am speechless how disgusting that is. Who the f*** rapes their three-year-old daughter and then doesn't do jail time for it?
Right. How did local media just
miss that? How do you miss that? This is just repulsive. I feel sick.
That's what I don't get about the media. How can you be a journalist and just not report something like that? How could you just not do that? How can you be a person and sleep at night as a journalist? That's your job.
That little girl is never going to be okay.
No, never. Wow.
Yeah. Jen, you got to warn me before you drop these things. I have never, the fact that I've never heard this story and like other folks have never heard this story is just completely appalling.
Yeah, I know. yeah. Maybe that story obviously needs to be more widely shared, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, wow, Jesus. I have no words.
Yeah, so I fully intend on doing some DuPont journalism.
And they can't actually go back and retry or put him in jail now. I mean, I guess the best they could do was get the civil litigation against him. I mean, but also, can you imagine being married to this guy and finding out about this? Like, how would you ever forgive yourself? I would be saying to myself, how did I not see this? Like,
well, she had to have known because it happened in 2009. And she divorced him in 2014. Yeah. Okay, so here's Rudy, my arch nemesis, and karma receiver. How three major. Okay, so this story. This story is actually about the horribleness of both Rudy Giuliani as well as the horribleness of corporate media. So this is a real win for all good people and independent journalists. How three major news organizations all got a story about Rudy Giuliani wrong. And this harkens back to Russiagate, of course. If you all remember Rachel Maddow and friends and their constant call of everything, you know, being Russia's fault and everything being tied to Russia, they're still doing it. So incorrect information from government sources apparently led three separate organizations, including, like, they're not like, including me, incorrect, like, Washington, this is out of the Washington Post, and they were one of them. Incorrect information from government sources apparently led three separate news organizations. I have to.
Jen, it's just like the Iraq war we were just talking about, isn't it? They just took the source as verbatim being true without questioning it. Big mistake.
Or did they do it on purpose?
The New York Times?
The Washington Post, everyone.
Washington Post, yeah. I mean, they're stenographers for War Incorporated, possibly, but I do genuinely believe that particular reporter, and I can't remember her name now, you're taking me back 20 years. I think she just never questioned it and kept reporting this stuff, which was just, and then it was like a house of cards, right?
I don't know. I think she, well, I don't know. I want to take a red pen and, like, delete, apparently, like, information from
the... I know, right?
Led three separate news organizations, including this publication, to publish the same erroneous claim about Rudolph W. Giuliani last week that all three later corrected. The Washington Post, the New York Times, and NBC News all reported Thursday that the FBI had briefed the lawyer to President Donald Trump that he was a target of a Russian disinformation campaign during his efforts to dig up unflattering information about then-candidate Joe Biden in 2019. In fact, the news organizations later said in corrections appended to their story Saturday that Giuliani had not been briefed by the FBI. The original stories were published after Wednesday's FBI raid of Giuliani's office and home, part of a criminal investigation of his activities in Ukraine. The corrected versions of their stories, both the Post and NBC, reported that the FBI was aware Giuliani was the target of a Russian operation and that it planned to warn him about this, but ultimately did not. So this, you know, the Post and the NBC reported that the FBI was a target of a Russian operation. So I even question that.
Yeah.
They always say
that. They always say that.
And they can always say this.
They can and do, yeah. I mean, the new Cold War is the old Cold War. It's just never ending.
But you can say this about any public political figure in the United States.
Yeah.
Any public political figure in the United States is a target of a Russian operation, because that is what we do to Russia. That is what Russia does to us.
Exactly. It's meaningless drivel.
So you can, at any time, the Washington Post can make a headline whenever they want to about Rudy Giuliani saying this. At any time, they can make a headline about Trump saying this. At any time, they could make a headline about Biden saying this, but they will never do so. At any time, they could make a headline saying this about Hillary Clinton, but they will never do so. At any time, they could make about anyone that they want to, but they will only do so when it suits their needs. So this is a very disingenuous thing. This is manufacturing consent. This is propaganda. Mm-hmm. So the three news organizations were reluctant Monday to discuss their sources. Imagine that. And reporting methods. Imagine that. Why would you be reluctant to discuss your reporting methods? That is very sketchy. In its correction, NBC said the incorrect claim about a Giuliani disinformation briefing was based on a source familiar with the matter. But a second source now says the briefing was only prepared for Giuliani and not delivered to him, in part over concerns it might complicate the criminal investigation of Giuliani. The Washington Post, which was the first to present the briefing claim, originally cited several current and former U.S. officials and people familiar with the matter as the sources of information it later retracted. But it appears that that competitive pressures and a lack of response from Giuliani and his representatives on deadline helped push the stories in the wrong direction. What an admission! That's amazing.
That is amazing. Come on, Washington Post. I mean, this is an organization that has every resource at its fingertips. Wow.
Just incredible. Make that the headline.
Yeah, they buried the lead.
Yeah. We weren't rigorous enough, conceded Times editor Dean Baquette in an interview Monday. Baquette said the Times reporter scrambled to match what appeared to be a major Giuliani scoop by the Post after it was published Thursday. And that's the thing. You know, the Times is supposed to be the paper of record. The Washington Post is essentially on the same level. By the same level, I mean they're all terrible. And they're trying to out-scoop each other. They probably definitely had the same source, the same propagandistic source, and they're just, this is not journalism. This is not.
No, it's not.
Journalism. This is disgusting, and it's all.
I mean, they're not really, like, it's one thing to say I'm going to protect an anonymous source and I'm going to verify what this person has told me. That's one thing, right? It's another thing to do what they're doing.
Yes.
They're just saying, according to several U.S. officials, right? Well, if it's U.S. officials, you're going to have to get one of them to go on record.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or in the very least, supply you with a paper trail that's verifiable.
Like, yeah. And this is something that Jordan and I are working on a story, a Flint story right now, another Flint story. And I have to tell you, the level of vetting that we're going through for sourcing is, oh my gosh, just about 10 levels deeper and more thorough than
the New York Times, apparently.
The lawyer who's, so a story, for those who don't know, before publishing a story, it goes through editing, it goes through an editor, it goes through a check with fact checker, and it goes through a lawyer to make sure for deep investigative stories, especially when.
Right. Something that might open you up to liability as a paper if you publish.
Right. Yeah. Especially if you are revealing information about people, public figures, or people who may go after you.
Corrupt public officials.
Public officials. Yes. So we are.
Corrupt police officers.
we're being very, very thorough, and the lawyer is being extremely thorough. And so these are supposed to be the top newspapers in the entire world. And
I tell you what, Jen, if we came to them with a really fully vetted story, they would not print it as easily as they printed this.
No.
They would probably give us a hard time. That's what slays me.
They
you know what I'm saying?
We've tried.
Oh, see, exactly, right?
The New York Times tried to steal our story once, but that's about it.
That does not shock me.
Meanwhile, the reporters on the story had attempted to reach Giuliani for comment before they published, but the lawyer did not respond, apparently because his phone and other electronic devices had been confiscated during the FBI raid. His attorney, Robert Costello,
he must have had an iPhone.
His attorney, Robert Costello, did not respond to multiple requests for comments by Post reporters Thursday. So they're talking about the corrections. They're also saying the Post initially said OAN, One America News, which is the worst. Well, between that and Newsmax, had been warned by the FBI as well.
And I think OAN might be worse, actually.
Yeah, so that's what it might be. So they're saying that they potentially withheld the information from Giuliani after all because it might compromise the investigation, but what reason would there be for withholding that information from OAN? So this is a bizarre.
That is bizarre. That is really bizarre.
Yeah.
Really? Yeah. I got to ponder that one.
This is what happened. CNN also picked up the inaccurate Post story, repeating its inaccurate claim during a segment Friday. So all of these outlets pick each other's story up.
Right. Well, if one publishes it, it gives cover for the second. That's sort of how the House of Cards goes. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Well, the Washington Post editors are going to say, well, the New York Times picked it up. We're safe. There's a degree of safeness to the story now.
Yeah. Well, and I have to wonder, was this on purpose that they published this, or was it truly a mistake, or was the source truly mistaken? So was it on purpose for the headlines? Because people don't really read the retractions.
The damage is done generally, right?
Right. So that's the same sort of, I mean, this is obviously a very different topic, but, you know, the like when Bernie won Iowa, but Pete Buttigieg took the headline, the damage is already done because the headline went out there and that's all people read. So with Giuliani, like the headline went out there, the damage is already done. Obviously, I don't care about any damage to Giuliani, but I do care about truth in journalism. So
yeah.
I don't know what happened here, but it's fishy.
Well, it is fishy. And then, of course, they always hand the football back, the toxic football, I should say. Like, you're now, like, kind of validating his claims of fake news.
Yes.
I mean, that's the worst part.